I want you to hear from Laura Klander. Laura has a beautiful story that she shared with me recently, and I can't wait for you to hear it. I've just recently gotten to know Laura and Chuck through our small group. They've been a part of our church family and fellowship for many years, but we've just really kind of started to get to know each other through small group. And she has such a humble heart and such a powerful spirit. I want you to get to know Laura. Laura, come, if you will, and share with us, please.
Thank you for asking me. When Pastor first asked me to tell my story, I wanted to say no. I don't have a prodigal son story. Instead, I'm the introverted brother who stayed home and did the right thing. But you know, that story to me is always convicted because it's really a story about the older brother's heart. Being proud, jealous, and resentful is just as bad as overtly sinning. I've been in church my whole life. In fact, I used to joke that I was born under a pew because the church was my family's entire life. My earliest memories are leaning against my mother's arm and hearing the muffled sound of victory in Jesus while my dad sat on the stage as a deacon. I really can't remember a time when I wasn't a Christian. I went to private Christian schools from first through eighth grade, where I memorized countless Bible verses. I even used to go forward every year at summer camp just to make sure that Jesus really was in my heart. Life was good. I had two parents who adored me, as well as a sister 9 years and a brother 6 years older who I looked up to. I was the baby of the family and loved nothing more than being a homebody and shopping with my mom. Around junior high, when many kids start rebelling, I found a new passion and deeper faith in God. My parents moved to Snohomish, Washington, and built a house in the country, which made it too far for us to drive to my private school. For the first time as an eighth grader, I went to public schools, and I found that school was the coolest thing ever. There were countless electives, and I loved the challenge of having teachers instead of a self-paced education. While other kids were bored with school, I finally loved school and was the biggest nerd. My family also changed churches at this time, and my faith was cemented when I joined Rock Solid Youth Group. Pastor Dave taught me to always ask what the therefore is there for and other quirky things that I've remembered for the last 30-ish years. My faith in God had never been more real or important. I was at youth group every Sunday and Wednesday. I even joined Pastor Dave's MT, a special ministry team, which was for the core kids committed to becoming empty and taking on the very nature of a servant. I finally was baptized and wrote down the date so I had proof at last that I really was saved. Having my rock-solid youth group kept me from even considering being bad in high school. I was having too much fun being good. I'd been dating one of the youth leaders my senior year, and as graduation drew near, he began to express his desire to marry me. Now, how my parents ever let me date a guy who was 6 years older than me, I have no idea. He had his own business and wanted to build his dream house overlooking these gorgeous acres in the beautiful valley in Washington State. As flattering as that was, I knew that I needed to keep going to school. I had no idea what I would major in. I didn't even know you had to have a major. But as the baby of the family, I knew that I needed to go out on my own and grow up before I even considered marriage. I've always liked to be a little different. And I found a beautiful private Christian school, Trinity Western University, just over the border in Langley, British Columbia, Canada. It was a couple hours from home, so I knew it would help me become more independent, especially since I didn't have a car to drive back home. Many of my youth group friends were already getting engaged to each other, but I just felt that I needed to grow up first. My private out-of-country school was expensive, and my parents promised me just 1 year of school. I had a lot of growing up to do, so I decided I needed a verse to dedicate to my first year of college. I found the perfect passage in James 1:4. My goal was to become mature and complete and not lacking anything. Maybe then I'd be ready to become an adult, maybe a wife and mom. But I forgot we have to be careful what we ask God for. It turns out he had a different plan for me than I had envisioned. I said goodbye to my youth group friends and my boyfriend, and my parents drove me up to Trinity Western. As we neared the campus and crossed over an especially dangerous train track, I thought to myself that there could be some terrible wrecks there. It turns out my foreshadowing came true the very next night. To shorten this part, I was in a car that was hit by a train the next evening. And to preface it, no alcohol was involved. I never even drank. There was an annual hootenanny on campus, and to help freshmen get acclimated, my RA arranged for her girls to go on a dorm date with the guys' dorm to a talent show. Afterward, we went to Dairy Queen for ice cream. I rode with two guys and a girl from my dorm, and I hardly knew the girl yet. On the way back from Dairy Queen, it begun raining. The road to the school ran parallel to the railroad tracks before making an S-curve to cross over the tracks. This particular crossing did not have crossing gates. As we neared the crossing, I began to worry. I looked back at the train and saw that it was coming quickly along our left. The passenger boy in the front told the driver that we could beat the train and just go for it. It turns out we didn't make the curve. The car slid off the slippery road and stalled on the tracks. We each scrambled to get out, but I couldn't get my buckle off in time. The train hit the car, its headlamp filling the car with light and shining the way through the darkness up ahead. I'll never forget Amy Grant continued to sing Lead Me On while the train pushed the car several hundred yards up the tracks. As I fumbled with my seatbelt, I worried if it'd be better to smash into the upcoming telephone pole to the left or to drown into the lake on the right. I still couldn't get my seatbelt off. I suppose that means it all happened very quickly. Finally, the train pushed the car out of its way and continued quite a ways ahead. I looked around the car, alone, and wondered if everyone had gotten out safely. It turns out that the train had smashed the right end of the car entirely around me. I was in complete shock, though, as I gathered all my things. I remember feeling broken glass on the car seat as I looked for an earring that had fallen out upon impact. I also was sad that a balloon I'd gotten earlier that night had popped, and my favorite red and black umbrella had been bent. How trivial. I was obviously in shock. I tugged my right foot free from where it had me pinned, and walked in dark along the uneven rocks to the train's light ahead. I didn't realize at the time that my broken ankle was the reason the walk was so treacherous. After the conductor asked if I was okay, I sat in the front of the train on the tracks, and the driver of the car found me. He told me that he had gotten out safely. They had found the passenger boy who had been thrown on impact and was in bad shape, with a broken collarbone, jaw, and other injuries. He wouldn't answer me about Tammy. It turns out Tammy, who had been in the back beside me, died instantly. For years, I struggled with survivor guilt because Tammy had a purpose. She was going to be a doctor, and I was just a naive girl who had no clue what I was doing in life. Later at the hospital, I didn't want the university president to call my parents because it was time for me to grow up. Of course, they came immediately and were ready to let me quit school before it even started. But I was determined I had to stay if I was ever going to become mature and complete and not lacking anything. It was difficult for me to branch out that year because I was still the introverted homebody who was now extra anxious and worried that everyone just felt sorry for me because I was that girl from the wreck. How egocentric and melancholy. That year continued to be difficult. My boyfriend didn't wait for me. I was told that he got married that spring to someone he'd just met 3 months prior. And then my dad got a job offer in Texas. My parents sold our home we'd just moved and moved across the country, leaving me in Canada without a vehicle. My friends were all getting married and starting their families back in Washington. And then finally, that summer, I learned that my roommate and her boyfriend drove off a road and drowned in a lake in Canada. I mean, you just cannot make this stuff up. I couldn't imagine what God was going to take from me next. Meanwhile, I was lost and mad at God. I could not understand how I had given him my whole life. I had wanted him to use me. I had wanted him to make me mature and complete and not lacking anything, but he left me broken, empty, and alone. And I had nothing. I ended up moving to Texas after finishing that year, and I still had no clue what I wanted to be or do. My parents' church friends encouraged me that God had a plan for my life, and he let me survive so I could do great things for him, blah, blah, blah. If that were true, why wouldn't he tell me what it was so I could help him get it started? I went to school at Mary Hardin Baylor and considered teaching, but I just couldn't imagine a quiet girl like me talking in front of people every day. Oh, God's irony. Since I was new to Texas, I decided that I should learn how to two-step. So for my PE credit, I took a dance class. And that's where I met Chuck Lander. He was one of four guys in a class of 70-something girls. I don't know how. He's a mess. I don't know how I got the nerve, but I worked my way through the front of the crowd to make sure I got to dance with him. There was no one like Chuck Lander. He could make me laugh and challenge and inspire me all at the same time. However, he was not exactly the youth pastor image that I had always envisioned for myself. He was going to be a football coach and a science teacher. Now, we were friends the rest of college, and he encouraged me to reconsider teaching, and then he even helped me persevere through those first rough years of teaching. But little did I know at that time, he knew I was the one back in dance class. I finally married my best friend after knowing him 5 years, and to this day, there's still no one like my Chuck Lander. I was so excited to be a coach's wife and begin our life dedicated to raising our own kids as well as others. Sorry, this part always gets me. To be honest, we decided not to wait on having kids. After 3 unsuccessful years, we were finally considered infertile and allowed to start seeing a fertility doctor. I was ever brokenhearted as I would watch others easily have one baby after another. I even had one of my own high school students offer to let me adopt her baby when he was born. That's flattering. It's weird. I was more depressed and hopeless than I'd ever been before. I kept crying out to God, reminding him that he had promised to give me the desires of my heart, and I wasn't asking for anything bad, but he just wasn't listening. I reminded him how I had given up everything for him so that he could make me mature and complete, but by now that phrase made me resentful. Well, it was around that time that I finally reread that verse in its full context. James says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." If I had known that was the precursor, I'd have picked a different verse. But he goes on. It gets better. "If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God." Now, y'all know what happened to the last guy that asked for wisdom. Oy. "You should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like a wave of a sea blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect to receive anything from God. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do." And then in verse 12, it said, "Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him." I finally realized that whenever I dedicate a verse to my life, I better read the whole verse in its context. God has good things for me, but he'll only give them after he tests me first. I was still so very mad at God. I was always the good girl. I always lived my life for him. And like the prodigal's brother, I couldn't believe that he continued to bless everyone else around me. Why did they get the fatted calf? Why did they get a baby when they just leave him with a sitter? Why did you let me live, God, if you don't even have a plan for my life? This is not what I pictured. After 4 long emotional years of fertility drugs and weight gain, Chuck and I decided to finally just quit trying. We decided to save up our money for the big dog procedure, as we called it. I immersed myself in my classroom, becoming the best teacher I could. Teaching was more than my job. It was my hobby. Chuck was a dedicated coach and teacher, and together we were the perfect educator couple whose whole life literally revolved around school. And then, one Sunday while Chuck was at coaches' meetings, I was folding laundry and listening to CMT on TV, and Alan Jackson's song Remember When came on, and I began to sob. And I'm not used to do. All I know is that I have to remember that without him, I'm nothing. I may not have had a prodigal life, but my anger and bitterness were just as toxic to him as any outward sin could ever be. I still want God to use me, but I'm scared. I don't want him to hurt me and take away everything I love again. Because again, I've learned that anytime I ask God for a promise, I have to make sure I read that whole verse so I know what I'm getting into. But you know what? God will still find a way of surprising me, because I firmly believe that he has to be in charge. He wants to be the one that makes things happen, because without him, I really can do nothing. You see, he's a God of paradoxes. When I'm weak, he can then be strong. When I give him my life, he might take everything, but it's so he can give me even more than I knew I needed. God really did give me the desires of my heart. He's given me a family who I treasure and adore, and it may have taken me years to find Chuck Klander and 7 more for us to have Brock and David, but they are worth it. Thank you for letting me tell my story. After being mad at God for 27 years, I'm finally giving him the glory.